I just found this idea really inspiring to me. I found this video because I found this quote somewhere, and then I was like, who is this guy? And then I searched for this guy and found this video. Remember, the single most important factor to succeed is love. And he talks about, in the very beginning of the video, I can't remember the exact words, but something like, I am wildly crazy about skateboarding. Like, his consuming passion is to skateboard. And what he would say is that you can work real hard, but if you don't have love behind it, if you don't just really love the thing you're doing, then you'll wear out. You'll choose to watch TV. What we're doing over Lent is we're doing a series that we're calling The Five Loves. And we're talking about, really at the heart of it, this idea. That for us as followers of Jesus, this idea of what is successful, what does it mean to be successful in our pursuit of God, really at the heart of that is love. And so we want to take Lent as a season to focus ourselves and to maybe reassess our loves. This is really a season to maybe think about, like, what are the things I really love and how am I doing in those spaces? And what's driving me? And if I get to the spot where he talks about where I'm 95 years old and I'm asking myself, like, what did I give my life to and how did it go? That probably what got me to those spaces is love. Because as Meatloaf taught us, I would do anything for love except that, whatever that thing was. And so over the next couple weeks, what we're going to do is this year for us at Imago, Lent is a five-week exercise. The sixth week of Lent is our 10th anniversary, and so we're going to celebrate that week. So we're going to, do Lent-ish this year. And what we're going to talk about each week is these five categories of what does it mean to give myself to love of God, to love of myself, to love of others, to love of creation, and to love of enemies. What does that look like? And how do I live in those ways? What does it mean to really go after loving God in that kind of way that he goes after skateboarding? And what does that mean to love myself in the way that God loves me? What does that look like in the way that dude is passionate about skateboarding? And then others, what does it mean to love others? And what does it mean to love the creation? And what does it mean then, the hardest of them all, where we'll finally get to, is what does it mean to love my enemies? By the way, can I give a little tangent on the enemies thing? I saw a really beautiful Facebook post this week, and somebody here was asking, should the shooter in Florida get the death penalty? And it was an interesting conversation about if we're to love our enemies, killing our enemies doesn't solve anything. And so there's just this really complex conversation about what does it mean to love our enemies, even when our enemies, whoever they are, might do horrible, awful things. Yesterday, I don't know how many of you have seen Black Panther yet. Is it brilliant? I mean, so many levels of brilliance, but the closing at the very end, and I try not to spoil it, because usually what you do to win is you kill your enemy, and in the end, he offers to heal his enemy. What? I'm not spoiling it. There's more to it than that. There's a lot more to it than that. You don't know what happens next. It was good. So I hope over the next couple weeks you're challenged. I should give credit. This series came to us from Chris Schaffner. He's the one who kind of seeded this idea, and we've been working at it as the formation team over the last couple months, actually. We started back in November kind of slotting ideas, but we really want to push ourselves during Lent to maybe think deeply about these particular issues and really to think deeply about how do I focus the attention of my love in a way that motivates me in these spaces? How do I get there? And so we want to get really practical, and I'll lead you into that as we get a little further along. But I want to say a couple other words before we start talking this morning about love of God, because love of God is probably the easiest of the five to get to. But I want to start here. This is a book called The Four Loves by C.S. Lewis. If you don't know who C.S. Lewis was, C.S. Lewis was an Oxford Don. He was a professor of literature back in the 50s, 60s. I don't know what it takes to become an Oxford Don, but that would be awesome to put on a business card someday. And so he wrote this book. I read this book years ago, and I started flipping through it again a couple weeks ago, preparing for today and refreshing the thoughts. So we're doing a series called Five Loves. He talks about four loves, but he's talking about the character or the quality of love, not so much the focus. What we're going to be talking about is like the skateboard dude, how do you focus your love in a direction? And we'll be doing that. But he talks about the character of love. And so I wanted to kind of set that up for us to kind of give us some underlying like foundation for our discussion over the next couple weeks. The first category isn't one of his four loves. You can see his four loves up there, affection, friendship, eros, and charity. But he first starts off by talking about the idea of like. That the English language, lucky we have this word like, many languages don't. So like is just something like we say all the time. Like Rob Bell, when Rob Bell started his career, he did these videos called Numa videos. And the one, I think it was called Flame, he talks about this word like. And the line I've always loved is like how quickly we can move from I love you and I love tacos. And we know what we mean when we get there. We don't quite mean the same thing as we mean when we say I love you as when we say I love tacos. But that word's useful to us still, right? And so I just wanted to put that as a category out there. No offense to Taco Bell. So the first category that Lewis talks about is this idea of affection. Affection is this instinctual kind of love that comes from familiarity, satisfaction, being together. Change is a threat to affection because affection is almost always circumstantial. I want you to think about a neighbor you had maybe. Maybe it was in college, a roommate or a next door neighbor, somebody that you like really liked until you moved, right? And then maybe you had a neighbor that you really liked these neighbors and then you moved and the circumstances changed and you were like, well, we're just not friends anymore. It's like, I'm sure if we were in the same space together, I would have affection for them. This almost comes to us most of the time just really naturally. You just have, like, I'm not going to ask anybody to point, but around this room, you just have affection for some people. Like, there's some people that you were hoping when you came here this morning, like, I hope those people are here. I just like to see their faces, right? Anybody have that this morning a little bit? That's part of why you're here this morning? It's like, I just hope there's these people here that I really like and I trust they'll be here. There's just that affection that comes and it's just really at a gut instinct level. Lewis says then the next level up of love is friendship. He says this is the least natural of the loves, the one that we're going to talk about, eros. What he talks about is affection just kind of comes over us. That's like the love at first sight thing. And eros is the thing that makes babies. But friendship is that space in between. It's the least essential, and it's companionship. It's being naked with another person, not in a physically naked way, but it's emotionally open and honest, mutuality. That's what friendship looks like. He says of the loves, friendship is the one that we can actually live without. It's not a great existence. We don't love the existence, but we don't need it in the same way we need the others. And then finally, he talks about eros. Eros makes a man really want not a woman, but one particular woman. In some mysterious but quite indisputable fashion, the lover desires the beloved herself, not the pleasure she can give. The idea of eros is that eros goes deeper than obviously affection and friendship. We all know the huge gap between friendships and eros, but the idea of eros is that eros is specificity. Of all the women in the world, it's her that I want to be with. That affection is driven towards that one individual. And he says, and I love this, and I'm just previewing his book because none of this is really the stuff I want to talk about. Actually, I do want to do a whole series on this. This is not what we're doing this Lent. Eros, I love this, obliterates the dissection between giving and receiving. That when we are really in eros kind of relationships, you're not keeping score. It just kind of all dissolves away. I don't know about you, but one of the ongoing fights in our house is about what's fair. Like, I wash the dishes. He should be drying them. He quit early. It's not fair. Punches, yelling. Not so much punches, a little bit. But lots of yelling and arguing around our house a lot around how unfair our house is all the time. And eros... I should say very clearly, it's not between Jennifer and I, just to be clear. Because of this, right? Because we have eros. And when there's eros, you don't keep score. So all of those, what Lewis calls all three of those, and the reason I'm racing through those is Lewis calls all of those natural loves. Affection comes to us, friendship we cultivate, eros strikes us, and we love those moments too, right? The fourth love is the one that Lewis says is unnatural to us because charity is godlike love. It's love that happens without condition and extends out into the universe without caveat, reservation, hesitation, or condition. It's the kind of love that God has for each of us. Now, when we start talking here about love, and I start talking about love of God, love of self, love of others, love of creation, love of our enemies, this is actually what we're trying to talk about. I'm not asking us over the next couple weeks to be affectionate about our enemies. I don't expect that you're ever going to feel particular affection for pick a political leader or pick. I wouldn't expect anybody in this room has any amount of affection for the shooter in Florida this week, right? That doesn't seem right. But we are called as Christians to have charity towards everyone. And so what does that look like? How do I cultivate a space of God-like love in me in each of those categories? How do I think about the creation, for example, in a God-like way, and then respond to the creation in a way like God would? That's the trajectory. That's at least the goal of the Christian life. Norman Vincent Peale is famous for saying, shoot for the stars and you get the moon. And that's the case here. Just to say, for you perfectionist types right now, not going to happen. There's no space we get to in the spiritual life where we say, oh, I've arrived. I now have God-like love for everyone. Right? Like, that just isn't how it works. But it is still the ideal to which we are striving after. That's the thing we're supposed to be going after, is how do I cultivate this space of God-like love for me? So when we talk about our enemies, when we talk about creation, when I talk about others, even if I don't understand them, when I talk about even myself, which for some of us in this room might be the very hardest space, how do I look at myself in a way that God looks at me? How do I think about myself in a way that God thinks about me? This is the trajectory that we're after over the next couple weeks. Is that overwhelming? If it's not overwhelming, I'll keep talking some more, because it ought to be. When we start talking about God-like love, or we'll just have you come up here and we'll do quiz time. Like, how about this person in your life? You love them with a God-like love all the time? No, like, that's really hard for us. And so that's why we're leaning in this way over land. I wanted to spend a minute just, though, before we get there and talk about some of the enemies of love. But let me pause for 10 minutes, take a drink, and you tell me, what stops us from getting to God-like love? Self, yeah, pride, fear. Talk about that one. I just heard a disembodied voice over there. Yeah, it's hard to love things we don't understand or we're afraid of. Or I even think, I went in a different direction as soon as you said that, about sometimes we're afraid to love because we've done it before and it's cost us. Yeah. Shame. Inadequacy. Busyness and distraction. Sometimes we mean to love and we're just lazy about it, right? Anybody ever been there? Like, man, I really wanted to let that person know I love them, and I just didn't do it. Apathy. Yeah, which goes kind of with the sloth idea. So this was just my ideas, like, right? So jealousy, that's legit. And Lewis actually talks a lot about jealousy, but that's another sermon. Sloth, just being lazy or apathetic. Selfish, somebody said that. My own ego gets in the way. Because love, when we talk about enemies and stuff, we'll get there, but love always requires me to say I'm sorry at some point. If I'm really going to have charity, I'm going to have to learn to say the words I'm sorry somewhere. And so that's a challenge to my own ego. Sometimes ignorance. And what I meant by this one is that sometimes I just don't know what it means to love somebody well. Anybody ever had this experience? I'll say, like, in marriage, like, I thought I was being loving by telling you that dress doesn't fit, right? I don't do that, but I was just trying to make up something and not be too personal. But we've had that, right? Like, you thought you were being loving towards someone, you were trying to move in loving actions, and then you find out, like, yeah, that thing that you're doing all the time really grates on me. And marriage, I think, is this process of learning over the years that specificity of eros. Like, how do I love this person well? I was in a meeting a couple weeks ago where somebody was like, you were there. Those millennials are just so hard to love, and they just need to get off their phones and come to meetings. And I was like, my example to the person was like, yeah, that's, I whatever. And the other instructor was a millennial, which she took great offense. And but what I said to the woman is, I said, if I said to you all the time, like, I had my coffee cup. If I said to you all the time, like, I'm going to bring you coffee, and you said, like, I really hate coffee, and I said, well, this is the way I'm going to love you anyway. That's not loving at all, to keep showing up and forcing coffee at you, and you're just like, this is stupid. I've told you 10 times I don't like coffee, and you keep bringing it, right? That's what I meant by ignorance. is sometimes we're well-intentioned, but what gets in the way of love is our own lack of knowledge about what is good to be loving. Fear said doubt, and I think I was thinking more doubt about myself and sometimes pain. Sometimes it's our own pains, the own hurts that we've experienced that make it really difficult to love. And so I just want to name those things up front to say that over the next 5 weeks, those things might crop up. As I'm talking or others are talking, those things might crop up in your head and you might experience some of those things as we start talking about what does it mean to live with charity towards God, self, others, creation, and enemies. So this first week, we're going to spend the remainder of our time, which isn't a lot, talking about love of God. And I want to give props to Becky, who makes awesome graphics. I want to leave this one up for a second just because it's amazing. But we start with love of God because here's why. If we're going to talk about God-like love, the only way we're going to know that love, the only way we're going to be able to do that is if we get close to it ourselves. If we don't experience it ourselves, if we don't know what it is to be in loving relationship with God, it doesn't matter what we do. I was thinking about the example of the person who's just a real jerk who decides to go on a service project. What kind of person are they on a service project? They're a jerk on a service project. You have something that you say that I can't say in here. What do you call, how do you say it? Just use the word jerk instead of the word you usually use. A sober jerk is still a jerk. I may have butchered it because there's lots of other colorful language that makes it better. But you get the idea, right? You get the idea that if we don't have an experience of love, if we haven't been transformed by a relationship with God, of a loving relationship with God, if we haven't been transformed by that ourselves, if we're not experiencing that, if we don't have intimate knowledge of that, we can't actually go out and do it for other people. It's not a program and a checklist of things I check off. Well, I came and I served and I did the thing and so you should like it. Thank you very much. Absolutely not. I have to be transformed first. So we start with love of God first, and then next week we'll transition to thinking about how God loves me in return. But I wanted to go here because I just love this passage, and there's a particular phrase. It comes from Matthew 4, and it's the setup for Lent, which is really perfect for today. And it says this: next, Jesus was taken into the wild by the Spirit for the test. The devil was ready to give it. I like that line. Jesus prepared for the test by fasting 40 days and 40 nights. That left him, of course, in a state of extreme hunger. Duh. Which the devil took advantage of in the first test. Since you are God's son, speak the word that will turn these stones into loaves of bread. What do you notice here in this passage? What seems interesting? Curious? Yeah. The way Matthew tells the story, the devil's first move is at Jesus' most physical space of vulnerability. He's really hungry, Matthew tells us. And the message just says that really well. Like, he's in a state of extreme hunger. Not like, hey, I missed lunch, I'm really hangry. But like 40 days of missed lunch, really, really hangry. Times 40. Yeah. Right, to go back to the enemies of love, like when we are in those spaces, it's harder to love because we don't have what we need. And that's why we start with this idea of love God first, that I have to be there first if I'm going to love others and love enemies and all that. I have to start here. Yeah, so the idea here is that Jesus is taken by the Spirit for this test into the wilderness. It's not the devil that drives him, it's the Spirit. There's a lot, by the way, behind this idea of, is this the right word for test? And does God test us? Is that what happens? Or is it just circumstantial for us? That I'm going to set aside right now, because that's a whole tangent. Danny. You said, hey, right. The temptation here is not to evil. It's just a short, to sell himself out. I'll get to you, Joe, just a second. If you really want to get into this story, I highly recommend Henry Nouwen's book, In the Name of Jesus, where he talks about the temptations. And it's really short, I promise. It's super short. You can read it in one sitting. But it's really great. Joe. Right. If he'd have gotten into a pattern of bailing out on his mission, yeah. The temptations, to summarize for me and the other temptations that follow, are all about Jesus leaving aside his mission, about copping out. Take the easy pathway instead of the hard pathway. What I find incredibly fascinating about this passage, and when I looked at it a couple weeks ago, and it just, you know, sometimes when you read, something just jumps out at you that you've never noticed before. The phrase that really just captured me this time is this idea that Jesus prepared for the test by fasting. fasting isn't the test. That's important because for me, missing a couple meals feels like a test, right? Like that's the hard thing. And according to this passage, that's not the difficult thing. That was the training season for the difficult thing. The difficult thing was going to become the temptations in 40 days. Jesus prepared for that moment by fasting for 40 days. It's like this, I'll put it in running language. There's the marathon, that's the test. And all the other runs that you do up to the marathon are training. They're practicing. They're getting you ready for the test. They're not the test itself. The fasting is not the test. It's the temptations that are the test. And why that's significant to me is I started thinking about life is just full of tests, right? Life is just full of them. And I don't know whether the Spirit leads us into them or the devil leads us into them or we just get into them ourselves. I don't know. But life is full of opportunities for us to figure out our mettle. Like how strong we are. Like I don't know how many of you have ever done like a Tough Mudder. Like I haven't, but they look amazing because it'd just be fun to say like, look how, I mean, by definition, if you finish it, like I'm a Tough Mudder. And like that feeling of like, yeah, I can do this. Jesus is like seeing that, like I have to do some things to get myself ready for this thing. And that life is always going to bring those things. It looks like relationships that go bad, and it looks like health issues, and it looks like career stuff, and it looks like anything else. Every one of us knows. And if I ask, like, over the last 2 years, how many of us can say we faced something in our lives that was a test? Everybody in the room goes, yeah, there's been some things where I've had to work it out and be ready for, like, I had to make hard decisions. I had to make hard ethical calls. I had to really lean into saying I'm sorry when I didn't feel it, or I had to really lean into a season of forgiveness, and it was difficult. It was a strong test to my faith and to my character and to my identity. This is what happens. Like, this is how you get ready for it. This 40 days of fasting for Jesus is how to get ready for those moments. And so this story then becomes the seed for this idea of Lent. It's this story, this 40 days of preparation, that is the idea behind Lent. That just as Jesus went into the desert for 40 days to prepare for his temptation, in the church calendar, we set aside 40 days for preparation. In the early church, Lent was a season where they indoctrinated, I don't like that word, but they indoctrinated new people into the church. If you wanted to become a Christian in the early church, Lent was the season where they taught you what it is to be a follower of Jesus, and they prepared you for baptism because on Easter Sunday you would be baptized as your like welcome into the church time. And so Lent was that season of doing that. And so Lent is that for us. It's 40 days. For those of you that don't come from liturgical traditions, Lent is 40 days. It started on Wednesday. If you count from Wednesday to Easter and skip over the Sundays, because Sundays don't count, it's 40 days, just like Jesus's. And the idea is that it's a season where we lean into the disciplines. We lean into intentional practices and ways of being that prepare us for the real stuff of life. If you give up something during Lent, so many people in the traditions give up something during Lent, the giving up of that something is not the test. That's not the thing. That thing you give up doesn't really matter what you give up or how you give it up or even if you're very faithful at it. The point is that thing is training for when life hands you a real test. That Lent is an invitation into a time of year where we actually just do the training. We do all the interval running and the all that kind of stuff to get ourselves ready for when the test comes. Because unlike Jesus, we don't know when the test is coming. And so that's what we're after. And if you were here on Ash Wednesday a couple nights ago, you would have heard this prayer. This comes from the Book of Common Prayer, and I just love the wording of it. It's all old-timey wording, but it says, the priest will say, I invite you, therefore, in the name of the church, to the observance of a holy Lent by self-examination and repentance, by prayer, fasting, and self-denial, and by reading and meditating on God's holy word, and to make a right beginning of repentance. And as a mark of our mortal nature, let us now kneel before the Lord, our maker and our redeemer. And then they do the ashes. The idea, though, is it's an invitation into a season where we focus ourselves again on the things that they said on the other screen. Where we dedicate ourselves again to meditation and prayer and reading and intentionality in my walk with God. So to tie these two ideas together, what we're trying to do this Lenten season, very specifically here at Imago Dei, is to say, we're going to do that. We're going to enter into this season of Lent that kicked off on Ash Wednesday. We're going to enter into that together. And the focus of that training, of that preparation in our church this year is going to be on where do we focus our loves? How do I do love with God? How do I think about that? And how do I do love of self and others and creation and enemies? How does that work? And how do I train myself in ways so that when life calls me to really make hard decisions about how I'm going to love others, I've done training that prepares me for that test? That when life calls me, when I find that, oh my gosh, I have an enemy and I have to forgive that enemy, like what is that going to look like? Lent is a season where I prepare myself for that big time moment. Does that make sense? I just want to make sure we all understand this, that Lent is not a test. And so here's the other thing I want to say about this time of training, and then I'll get to the specifics, is when you're training, I don't know if you know this, but when you're training for a marathon, right? And it gets to a Wednesday, and the work went long, and you get home, and then it's like 5 degrees, and it's raining, sideways sleet, and you make probably a good decision, like, I'm not going to run tonight. What happens then? I was going to say, you quit training for the marathon, it's over, you missed a day of training, done, right? Absolutely not. You run on Thursday. You just do it the next day. And if you fall down on that day, and you go out on that run, and you can't do the mileage, and it's hard, what do you do? On Friday, you get back out there, you put your shoes on, and you go after it again. And so I just want to say really clearly, you don't get awards for how you do the training. The reward is the test. You don't get rewards for how you do Lent. So it doesn't matter what you gave up. There's no contest here about who did the most extreme Lenten thing this year. I've been in some traditions where there's almost like a, well, that person fasted for 40 days. Well, that person used juice. Ugh. Can't believe that person drank juice during their Lenten fast, weaklings, right? Like, that's not a thing here. If you say the hardest thing for me to give up is, I don't know, my second cup of coffee, fine, if that's what it is for you. If that's how you train for righteousness, great, do that thing. And if you screw it up, so what? Do it again the next day. Just get the training in, get the reps in, do it again. And so what we're going to do is we're going to invite you into a very specific practice every week. Coming out of the message, what does it mean? So today, like, what does it mean to love God well? How might we practice loving God so that when the test comes, I'm strong for the test? And we're going to ask you, I'm going to give you space here in just a minute to be very specific about what that looks like this week. And if you screw it up tomorrow, if you get to your day and you forget what you were going to do, then don't worry about it. Do it on Tuesday. And if you get to Friday and you realize, oh man, church is coming and somebody's going to quiz me there, A, we're not, and B, then do it on Saturday and do it on Sunday. Just wherever you are, just do it. So flip over your notes real quick. What you have on your notes then is this very practical way to get at this. What we're going to give you each week, the formation team worked these out like a month or so ago, and we've been kind of working at them a little bit. On the back of your notes is this. And so each week, we're going to give you reflections. For if I'm going to grow in my love of God, how might I grow in my knowledge? Or how might I increase my desire to align my will with His today? Or how might I demonstrate my love to God today? Those are just for your own reflection. And sometimes the message, we might like really drill down on those. Other times, we might just leave them for you. Today, it's more of leaving it for you. But that might be something that you might engage in a conversation with your family or your spouse or your small group or something else, or just in your own space. Below that, we have this invitation to practice. And so the invitation to the whole church this week is, what would it look like this week to set aside time to be quiet in God's presence? What might that look like if during this first week of Lent, we as a collective all said, like, I'm just going to set aside time every day. Notice what I'm not doing. I'm not telling you how long you have to do it. I'm not telling you at what time of day you have to do it. I'm not telling you what you have to do with that time. If you want to say, for the next week of Lent, to start off this week of Lent, I'm going to spend 10 minutes reading my Bible every day, that's amazing. Awesome. Good for you. Go for it. If you want to say, I'm going to spend 10 minutes in contemplative prayer, great. Do that thing. If you say, I'm just going to spend 10 minutes with my cup of coffee being quiet, awesome. Whatever it is for you. But what I want you to do before you walk out this door, and I'm going to shut up in a minute and let you do this, is I want you to write down very specifically what that thing is. not I'm going to set aside time to be quiet in God's presence. You know what happens when I make goals like this? I don't do them because it doesn't say anything. So what I'd like you to do is to get really specific. If you're willing to join the rest of the church in this, I'd like you to be really specific and say, for me, this looks like I normally get up at 5:15, so this week I'm going to get up at 5, and from 5 to 5:15 every day, I'm going to read the Gospel of Mark for 15 minutes each morning, Monday through Friday. The more details you can put to that, the better it is. If you could even put a space, hey, at 5 o'clock every day, I'm going to get up, I'm going to go to the den or study or whatever you call it, or I'm going to go to the kitchen, I'm going to make a cup of coffee, and then I'm going to go to the office, and I'm going to sit in my office behind my desk, and I'm going to read out of the message. Whatever specificity you can give it, the more likely you are to do it. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to be quiet for a minute and give you space to ask that question of you, like, what might it mean for all of us in this room, all 160, 70 of us in here today, to say for the next week, the invitation to Lent in this church, the way we're going to train for the test is just to practice being quiet with God for a certain time every day. And I'll let you fill that out, and then I'll say something and wrap us up in prayer. So just I'll give you about a minute to be specific about what that might look like for you this week. You can keep writing while I'm praying. That's fine. I just want to be clear with you. Each week we're going to change the thing. But you can keep going. Some of you may have, on Ash Wednesday, committed to long Lenten fasts. And I don't want to discourage that of any of you. If there's something that you just feel, like we as a family talked the other day a little bit about, okay, what are you giving up? And that's fine. But don't feel like we're trying to work at cross purposes to you. We're just going to keep inviting you into this is the thing the church is doing together. And next week it'll be something related to how do I love myself. And the week after it'll be related to how do I love others and the other ones. So, and then I just encourage you, part of good habit formation is sharing with others. And so it might be really good for you to share with the people, your people, whoever your people are. Again, spouse, friends, small group, whatever it is, to share with those people. Here's how I'm doing this. Here's how I'm leaning into loving God this week. Here's how I'm setting aside time. And really to have reflection space would be really good. Like, here's how it's going for me. I've never tried to spend 5 minutes a day in prayer. And this is what I experienced this week because I spent 5 minutes of being really intentional about prayer or whatever your practice is. I think these things are always better when we sit with a small group or sit with somebody we trust and have these kinds of conversations. And so I just want to invite you, especially during this Lenten season, to talk to people in your life about the things you're practicing. Let's pray, and then I think Dustin will come up and lead us into communion. God, if I asked for a list of tests that come along in our life, we would be at open mic all day long sharing the tests that have come our way. And at times in my life, I've been prepared for the tests, and other times I have felt woefully inadequate to face what I'm facing. And God, use the seasons in our life between tests. Help us not to waste those. Help us not, by our own sloth, by our own just distractedness, to not train for when life's going to be hard again. Because I think what I know is that we never get smooth sailing. It's always going to be a challenge again. And so help us to use this space, and especially the season of Lent, where it's kind of just built into the fabric of our church life together, our shared life together as a church. Help us to embrace a different way of living for a season. And I pray that there's good conversations all over this church over coffees and drinks and whatever else we meet and bump into each other, that there's good discussions about what it means to be intentional in our training. And I pray that in this season, maybe we experience you in ways that we've never experienced before. And so be with us. Help us to encourage each other and spur one another on to love and good works. In your name I pray. Amen.